We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's going on, everybody? This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode number 68. Have a special episode for you today. It's just going to be me on the podcast. Today I'm interviewing Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times Tribune. We talked about a lot of stuff with the Yankees minor leagues, Ref Snyder, Judge, Nick Swisher, who just made his debut in Scranton. So a lot of good stuff on this episode. But before we get to that, I do want to mention that episode number 68, you know who I'm going with. It's Big Dellen Betances. Got to go with him for number 68. He was nasty in Toronto, made Joey Bats buckle on that 3-2 curveball. So, of course, episode 68 goes to our favorite Dellen Betances. So, going to kick it over to that interview now. Hope you guys enjoy. Okay, we are joined now by Donnie Collins. He is on Twitter, at DonnieCollinsTT. He writes for the Scranton Times Tribune covering the Rail Riders, which, as I'm sure you know, is the Yankees' AAA affiliate. Donnie, what's up, man? Thanks for joining.
How you doing?
So you're in Scranton. Are you from the Scranton area?
Yeah, I was born in Scranton. Raised just outside the city, and I went away for college for 4 years. But when I moved back here, this is where I came to be. I mean, it's a really good area, really fun. I mean, for a guy who wanted to be a baseball writer, it was pretty neat to grow up about 5 minutes from a baseball stadium. So it was, you know, a fun place to come back to, and I've never left. I just love covering minor league baseball, you know, local sports, Penn State football, I do things like that.
That's excellent. Yeah, so I've never been to Scranton. My Scranton knowledge really just comes from The Office.
The Office, yeah.
Which I'm sure 99% of people is.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate. I do a lot of travel for college football, and I'll invariably go to a city, and somebody at the desk will look at my driver's license and ask me something about Poor Richard's Pub or Dunder Mifflin or something like that. And it's always pretty funny. I love the show too. So
does Poor Richard's Pub actually exist?
Poor Richard's Pub actually exists. It's in a bowling alley, actually. And you know, a couple of friends and I used to bowl a lot. So we're big Lebowski fans also. So we'd go bowling and, you know, go to Poor Richard's afterwards for just to hang out. And it doesn't look like it does on the TV show, of course, but it's an actual place. And a lot of the places, little known fact that, you know, a lot of the places that they do mention on the show actually exist.
Yeah, that's great. I'm from Rhode Island originally, and a lot of people know Rhode Island from Family Guy, and they ask if Quahog is an actual city in Rhode Island, which it is not. I don't know if you're a Family Guy fan. But I got a lot of those questions when I went to college as well.
Yeah, I am not. My sons are. They love Family Guy, but I did not know Quahog was not a city in Rhode Island. I just assumed.
No, just a sea creature, which is I think part of the joke.
So, I think I've only ever seen one or two episodes of Family Guy, and one of them, it was the one when he was singing with Tom Brady or something like that. He was playing football. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. So you said you grew up, so the Rail Riders were not always the Yankees AAA, right?
No. They've gone through a couple of incarnations. The story of this team is a long one, but the short version is, the short and cleaned up version, I guess, is that they ended up with a franchise that started in 1989, and 89 through 2006 they were the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Red Barons, and they were the Phillies AAA team. So we had, you know, when I first started covering this franchise, Chase Utley was the second baseman, and Nick Punto and guys like that, and, you know, guys who, Brett Myers, guys with Marlon Byrd, guys who had a long, you know, Ryan Howard, long careers in the big leagues. So I kind of ended up walking into this franchise when it was getting really good. And then after 06, the Yankees came in and kind of redid everything, redid this, you know, clubhouse got redone the season before, and eventually the stadium got redone. So you would never, if you were somebody who had gone to a game here from 1989 through 2006, and then just this year decided you wanted to come back, you wouldn't even know it was the same place. I mean, different affiliate in here, different looking stadium, one of the better minor league stadiums in the country right now. But a whole different atmosphere right now around the park, and you know, with the Yankees in, the Yankees. This is the 10th season with the Yankees here, and it kind of still seems like a new operation. You know, still kind of getting used to having the Yankees around and not the Phillies. That's how ingrained the Phillies were here.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. That's interesting how these minor league teams do this. They just change organizations, because I'm sure a lot of the people in Scranton are Phillies fans. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say it might be split between the Phillies and the Yankees, but there's probably more Yankees fans just because of the recent run they've had since the mid 90s. But yeah, it's we've seen a lot of switching and a lot of changing in the in AAA recently, because you know, not now the trend is, do they want to minimize paying for travel, so they want the closest affiliate they can get, and the Yankees kind of swooped in here after Steinbrenner had that close enough affiliation with Columbus for all those years because he's from there. But after Steinbrenner kind of ceded a little control there, you know, and Cashman and those guys kind of wanted to move the franchise a little closer to New York, and Scranton had a stadium that was kind of falling apart at the time, and you know, they helped make an investment into, you know, kind of changing that around, and you know, with some state money and everything, they got a really great facility out of the deal. So the Yankees are, you know, they're here allegedly another 25 years or so, whatever the lease is on the stadium. That's what it's tied into. It's a long term thing, but you're starting to see a lot of the big league franchises trying to find the closest affiliate they can get to where they're at now. So there's very few teams like, say, for instance, the Mets, who are in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that one always baffled me.
Yeah, that's just kind of, there's two, there, not to get into a long minor league conversation here, but there's two franchises in the minor, in AAA, New Orleans is one of them, and Las Vegas is the other, that nobody ever really wanted to be at, because obviously one's New Orleans and one's Las Vegas, and they don't want to take the risk with the players.
Sticking a 21-year-old kid who just suddenly came into a lot of money in New Orleans or Vegas is a risky proposition.
Exactly, and the Mets really badly, when the Phillies left, the Mets really badly wanted to come into Scranton, but the Yankees were the team they came to an agreement with. So the Mets, ever since, really have kind of been shuffling around, and Vegas was the, you know, they were the odd man out, I guess, and the Mets ended up there. But I'm pretty sure that as soon as somebody closer ends up, in this kind of little dispute with their affiliate, and which always seems to happen every couple of years, you know, the Mets will swoop in on a closer team, and someone else will end up in Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes sense geographically to have your team close to your professional team, especially today with how much rosters are shuffling. I mean, the Yankees with the Scranton shuttle, they're bringing in the last arm out of the bullpen twice a week, it seemed like, last year. So to have to, easy to just send a guy up the highway on a bus versus fly him out to Vegas, I'm sure.
Exactly, yeah, and it would have. They wouldn't have been able to do what they did last year if they were still in Columbus. Columbus has they have a major international airport there. It's pretty easy to get a flight out of there. But it's just easier. It's a car ride from Scranton to New York. I mean, you're there in an hour and 50 minutes if you leave at the right time of day. So it's a much better situation for the Yankees, and it's a great situation for Scranton, because this area. Triple A baseball was struggling here for a little while, and they needed the right team to come in here. And I think that a lot of the Yankees fans are coming around and seeing that, yeah, you can come out to the ballpark now and see, Jesus Montero a couple of years ago, Rob Refsnyder now, Aaron Judge now, and kind of, they are going to get called up. They are the future. They're big time stars. And last year, second half of last season, the attendance at PNC Field here was pretty remarkable. I had never seen a run like that for a team to kind of sell out as many games as they did in the second half last year, get 9,000-10,000 fans. It was pretty remarkable, and it's showing that fans are really coming around to the experience at the ballpark.
That's awesome to hear, because usually you get a sellout if some major league player is making a rehab stint, like Derek Jeter when he made his rehab stint, or I remember when Roger Clemens was coming back and he was making his tour through the minors. It was like you know, big press following him around. But it's great that, you know, the Yankees are finally having some prospects who are making waves and people are getting behind them. It was bleak there for a while. I mean, you know, you were there covering the team. For 5-6 years there was nobody coming through the organization that was really to get excited about.
Yeah, there was the occasional guy. I mean, Brett Gardner was here for a year. But I don't
Brett
know.
Brett Gardner doesn't exactly have the same cachet as Aaron Judge, who's 6'7", exactly. Hitting 450-foot home runs.
Yeah, exactly. And if Aaron Judge has the career that Brett Gardner's had, he'll have done pretty well for himself. But you're right. I mean, Gardner was not the prospect at that time that Judge is. And, Shelly Duncan, he hit those massive home runs, but there was no real hype around him. Austin Jackson had a great season here, but again, not one of the game's big prospects. Now on this team, you've got several of the game's bigger prospects. Last year, you had Severino, and he was 7-0 here, I believe. So he was worth the price of admission. But it's one thing to have some prospects. It's another thing for them to go out and perform. And I think to a certain degree, Sanchez last year certainly performed. Severino did. Aaron Judge had his moments, but Heathcott and Mason Williams were pretty good. Ref Snyder's been pretty good since he's been here, but you're also mixing them in with guys who you get to see on a daily basis. A guy like Ben Gamel, who's been great since day one here. They won last April, so to see them mixed in and see them kind of develop into what they've a kind of a prospect in their own right. It's been fun the last couple of years. More fun the last couple of years than it was the first couple. And they've always seemed to have really good teams here. I mean, they've had winners. They won the Governor's Cup in 2008 with the Yankees prospects. But these guys are – there's a little different feeling around the last two teams here.
Yeah, sometimes, though, having a winner in AAA doesn't necessarily mean you have a lot of good prospects. It could mean you got a lot of 4A players who – they know how to play the game better than a 21-year-old prospect. One guy that comes to mind is Keiagawa, who I saw him pitch in the minors a few times because, again, I'm from Rhode Island, so the Pawtucket Red Sox are right in town, and the tickets were like $5. So anytime the Yankees AAA team was in town, I would go. And I remember one time in college, I went over the summer, and Keiagawa pitched like a 7-inning shutout, like 2 hits. But he goes up to the major league team, and he gets absolutely crushed. So sometimes having your AAA team win can be kind of it doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. But with this recent team, it is the fact that they have a lot of good young talent. And you just mentioned a ton of those guys. One guy I want to talk about is Aaron Judge. And he's kind of getting everybody excited. But when he came up from AA last year, he kind of struggled a little bit, right?
Yeah, he had some moments. He'd get a big hit here and there. He could certainly hit a fastball, but he struggled against some of the better breaking balls. And that's the thing about AAA baseball that I don't think anyone really realizes. It's such a step up from AA. I actually think I really do believe that the step up from AA to AAA is the biggest in baseball, because in AA, wow, you're facing prospects. There's a lot of guys who throw very hard. You're dealing with a totally different type of pitcher. You go to AAA, then you get a guy like, I don't want to say Keiagawa. He never had great stuff, but you have guys with middling stuff here who know how to use it. It's tough to hit those guys sometimes. I mean, the guy who pitched last night for the Rail Riders, Tyler Cloyd, he's been one of the better AAA pitchers over the last 4 or 5 years, because he throws a decent fastball and takes a little off the fastball. He throws a curve and then gets it to, then he can throw it in the dirt. He's got some good command. He keeps you off balance. And a young hitter has never seen that type of pitcher in AA. And the reason is they're not, there are no guys like that in AA. It's much more of a prospect league. It's much more of a hard throwing league. And then when you come up here, you get the guy who is kind of the 4A pitcher. And the 4A pitcher will give a guy like Aaron Judge a lot of problems. The International League is a terrific league. It is the second best baseball league, second best baseball league definitely in the United States, maybe a top two or three league in the world. It's really, really a great league. And for Judge to come up and hit 230, it didn't surprise me. But it's he's going to have to make some adjustments, or else this will stall him. He's made some of those adjustments. The leg kick this year seems to have helped him a little bit with his timing, but he is still going to get beat by breaking balls. And Judge might just be a guy who is going to be susceptible to that going forward. But he's going to give you a lot of bang for your buck because he's going to run into 30 homers.
Yeah, I mean, he's gotten off to a hot start. I know it's only been a handful of games, but he's hitting .323 so far, which, you know, part of those adjustments you mentioned. So that's good to see. But do you think the hype around him is legit?
Yeah, I think so. Here's what Judge does really well that most of those big bodied players don't do. He does the athletic things. He's such a good defender. I mean, you can make an argument Judge is the best full time right fielder in the league. There's nothing lumbering about him. He gets a great read on the ball. He gets a great jump. He's got a really strong throwing arm. And right field at PNC Field is going to be a lot tougher to play than right field at Yankee Stadium because there's a lot less ground to cover in the big leagues. So he's going to be a terrific defender. He's a really good base runner. Last night in the ninth inning, he went first to third on a pretty sharp single. So I was pretty impressed by that. He's just so athletic. He's going to figure it out. I think actually the worst thing he does is hit, because he's going to strike out a lot, and he's still making those adjustments. But yeah, it's early. Even he said, yeah, it's too early to tell if the leg kick is going to work. But he's got some confidence in it. It's helping with his timing, and you know we'll see going forward. I think he's just because he's so athletic and so gifted and honestly such a hard worker and such a nice guy who really, you know, he takes everything. He doesn't get too high, he doesn't get too low, he's got the right attitude. He's such a good athlete though that I think he'll figure it all out. And you know, we were having a conversation the other day, if he decided in 5 minutes he wanted to quit baseball and declare himself eligible for the NFL draft in 2 weeks, he might get picked. He's that athletic.
Yeah, he's got that Rob Gronkowski frame.
Oh, you know, he's even bigger. I mean, the guy is like almost the size of LeBron James. He's a monster. And you know, you've seen, I mean, I know for a fact I'm 6 foot, maybe almost 6 foot.
You
one.
Tell people you're 6 foot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I am. I'm 6 foot one, legitimately. And Nick Swisher, who is listed at 6 foot or 6 foot one or whatever it is a full 3 inches shorter than me. I stood next to him last night.
Well, he's shrinking in his old age.
He is. But that's the thing. I mean, you look at a roster and say, well, this guy's listed at 6 foot. He's probably 5 foot 10 or something like or whatever number. But you look at the roster and Aaron Judge is listed at 6 foot seven. And you wonder if that's even a little short, because he's just so huge. If to stand next to him and to talk to him for 5 minutes, you just feel like the smallest guy that's ever walked into the clubhouse. He's just a giant. There's nobody I've ever seen that's quite like this guy.
Yeah, you really don't see that in baseball. Yeah, you mentioned those listings. You always got to question those, because I think Pablo Sandoval is listed at 255. I looked it up yesterday.
Yeah.
And there's no way that guy's 255 with all the news surrounding Sandoval right now. But all right, so you mentioned Swisher, everyone's favorite Yankees, coming back. People loved him when he was in the Bronx on the championship team and a couple years after that. I mean, he got paid to go away by Cleveland and Atlanta. So does he actually have anything left in the tank? You know, you can't really go based on the one game you've seen. I know he went 1-for-4, but, you know, what's your opinion? Do you think he could actually help the team this year?
We'll see. I mean, it's going to be a process with him. You know, ask in a week if he's gotten over some of the injuries and if he's physically ready to go, because from what I saw last night, if I'm basing it on one game, yeah, I thought he moved well around the bag. I thought he got to a couple of balls that I thought a slow-footed first baseman might have struggled with. He made some athletic moves, but offensively his timing's off. He's not there yet. He had a couple of pitches to drive last night and missed them. He was 1-for-4, but ironically, and nobody laughed harder about this than Swisher did, but his one of his four hits was an infield hit, or his 1-for-4, when, you know, his one hit was an infield hit, and he really had to leg it out too. So
yeah, that's a fluke.
Into the shift. So yeah, he's not going to get too many of those, but we'll see. I mean, he's going to get regular playing time here. It was a really bad time for Chris Parmalee to go 1-for-16. you know, if I'm not sure if he starts 10 for 20, you know, or something like that, if they don't just give him an extended run. But Swisher gives you something. He's a guy who he adds something to the clubhouse. Very obviously, he's not an act. He's always up. He's relentlessly positive. And I think that's going to rub off on this team here in AAA, and I think it would rub off on the Yankees. They need that youthful exuberance that he always kind of brought. I don't think he's done. I think he can contribute something. Is it quality first base at bat? Is it what Greg Bird gave last year?
That would be unbelievable. Yeah, no, I think Greg Bird was fantastic.
Yeah, it's not that. But if Mark Teixeira gets hurt, and that's really Swisher's role on this team. If Mark Teixeira gets hurt,
What
could they do?
Yeah, so I was watching the Tigers game when Teixeira was DHing last weekend, and Ackley was at first base, and he looked lost at first base. Two balls that he could have easily picked that any average first baseman picks. Ackley couldn't even come close to picking them. So I think that also plays a factor, is just they don't trust Ackley at first base. And at least Swisher has a lot of experience at first base. I know he's not a Gold Glove caliber first baseman by any means, but like you said, he can at least provide some depth there. And, you know, maybe he catches a little bit of that, you know, rejuvenation like we saw Soriano get a couple years ago when he came back to the Yankees. And, Swisher seems happy to be back with the Yankees organization.
Yeah, he's thrilled. I mean, I don't think there's a – I don't think it's semantics at all. I think he's thrilled to be back in the organization. But, yeah, that's what they're looking for is a little of the old Swisher magic. And I don't know if that's – If that's something that can carry you through a half of a season. He's going to have to show that he's healthy and could recapture his swing. But the interesting thing is, and this is something that nobody's really even considered. What if he hits? What if he could do it? What if he comes down here and he hits, you know, 300, and then you have to make a decision. But your decision really, essentially, if you're the Yankees, is Ackley. Mm-hmm. Now, You've traded for him. He's been on your radar for years. You've wanted him as a utility type of guy, but there's no other move to make. I mean, you're not gonna send whoever the shortstop is at the time, Torres or you know, whoever is in that spot at the time. Certainly not Torres right now. So you can't make that move. There's nobody else really on the roster where you're gonna send down an outfielder, I guess, but I don't see that happening either. It's not going to be Aaron Hicks. So it's got to be Ackley. So you've almost got to give up on a guy to take Swisher. Now, I'm not sure they're close to giving up on Ackley because he could do a lot more than Swisher can do, even if he can't play first base. But, you know, that said, it's going to come down to who hits. And there is always that concern with Teixeira because – you know, he's had a lot of fluke injuries over the years, and Teixeira has said it. Yeah, you know, they're flukes. It's not like it's something that's recurring, and I get that, but the fluke is recurring. So you always have to be kind of aware with Teixeira, and you know, it's not like you have Greg Bird anymore. You have Teixeira, and if you lose him, you're in big trouble. It's like losing your fantasy quarterback. Yeah. You're your fantasy football quarterback. If you lose him, your season's over.
Well, you saw what happened
to Teixeira healthy
last year when Teixeira went down. The offense totally sputtered, and Greg Bird was excellent, but especially against left-handed pitching, the offense was terrible. And in a couple games this year, the offense has been terrible against lefties. I think they're scoring an average of. They've scored like every 5 at bats against righties and every 16 at bats against lefties. So it is a problem, and that's something that Ackley doesn't give them because he's a lefty hitter. I know Swisher's a switch hitter. I don't know how much. I think he's a left-handed player. He's a left-handed thrower, so lefty's his natural side, right?
Yeah, whether it is or isn't, I mean, he's a better left-handed hitter. That's the issue at this point with Swisher, and you know it. You could take Greg Bird, what he did last year, and say maybe Mark Teixeira doesn't even do that down the stretch in the last 2 months. But the big difference there is you don't have Mark Teixeira in the lineup, and there's nobody in the league who was quaking in their boots, with all due respect to Greg Bird, that Greg Bird was coming up. There just wasn't. I mean, people were going to take any manager in the American League last year, and Greg Bird will tell you this. that any manager in the American League last year, any pitcher, would rather have faced him than Mark Teixeira. So it fundamentally changed the Yankees' lineup, and it would fundamentally change their lineup this year if they lost him. But Swisher does give you that. If he could recapture some of the swing, some of the power stroke. And last night he flied out. It was a weak fly ball to right field, but right field here at PNC Field is really, really deep. I mean, he probably hit it to a gap where there's, you know, it was 340. You know, but that's probably about two or three rows back at Yankee Stadium.
On a hot day in July, that might be in the stands.
So maybe if he's at Yankee Stadium last night, he's 2-for-4 with an infield single and a cheap home run.
Right.
And I think that the Yankees might take that from Swisher. Maybe he could run into the occasional cheap home run if he could do it. I mean, certainly he's going to drive a few, but that's really what they're looking for. It's what they're looking for from Ackley too, but. You know, hey, this is the time you're going to try Ackley. If you get to July and it's the pen, you're two or three games behind Toronto and they're really surging and you're going to be very reluctant to sit Mark Teixeira, but the guy's going to still need some rest. So I think that Swisher gives them a little bit of what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit of hope that they can get a veteran presence in there without having to give up somebody to get the veteran presence.
No, yeah, I hear you. And they have until June 15th, right, until he can opt out if he's not on the big club?
Yeah, that's correct. He's going to be in Scranton for 2 months unless he really tears it up and they decide that they need to make the move now.
And it's an interesting point you raise with Ackley. It's going to have to be Ackley because those are the most comparable players, you know, Swisher to Ackley. It's not going to be Torres, who has been playing exceptionally. He's been hitting, which I don't think they expected him to do. But I mentioned Torres because he took the job from Ref Snyder, or Ref Snyder didn't play well enough, so he gave the job to Torres. But Ref Snyder is one of these things that I just can't figure out because when he's been on the big league club, I think he's actually played pretty well. He's got some pop. He seemed athletic in the field. He's not a gold glove fielder, but he seemed competent at the very least. But the organization just does not trust him in the field. And I don't see him making the jump to the major league team unless that changes.
Yeah, I'm kind of chuckling at the point you're making because I totally agree with it. And I've been saying it for a long time. I don't know when all of a sudden defense at second base became such a premium for the Yankees. You know, they've always had a lousy second baseman. Steve Sachs was no good back in the day. I mean,
Cano was a gold glover.
Cano was a gold glover, but they didn't know that. They thought he was going to struggle defensively when he was coming up. They tried to convert him to third base too, but they've gotten by with Soriano there. They've gotten by with Knobloch. And I get it that the difference there is that they give you a better offensive game or a better offensive tool than Ref Snyder gives you. But I totally agree with him. If you watch Ref Snyder for 130 games, as I did last year and the whole second half the year before, you wonder what they're looking at because he makes the plays. I mean, does he get into some ruts at times? Yeah. Where he's, you know, his footwork isn't great or his arm angle's not great. Yes, but he fixes it. He fixes it fast enough, and he's able to make some plays. I thought last year at second base, he was able to make a ton of really good plays up the middle. He showed a lot of range. He made some adjustments, and I really thought last year that once, you know, in September, once he started to play a little bit down the stretch, and then he started in the playoff game, I really thought he was going to open the season as the second baseman. Now, and granted, Starlin Castro is a better player than Rob Ref Snyder. I'd make that trade too. So I get it. But now I think you just have to punt if you're the Yankees. There's nowhere for him to play. He's going to be around in case Castro gets hurt, but you don't really want that to happen. And moving him to third, that's not going to work. It's not an easy transition to make. I mean, to go from second base to third base, I've seen guys try to do it. I saw Chase Utley try to do it in the minor leagues about 15 years ago, and it didn't work. It was a mess. He couldn't do it. I would be shocked if Ref Snyder could do it. He doesn't have the third baseman skill set, really. He doesn't have the strong throwing arm. He doesn't have the experience there. It's not an easy position to play. I think his spot is second base, and I think his value to the Yankees is keeping him at second base, showing that he can develop there, and maybe trying to get some other teams to take him. And really, I think they've kind of let a good talent go. He's a guy who could have helped them in a big league spot. I mean, what really shocks me about him is he's a good outfielder.
I was just going to ask you.
Yeah,
I was just
playing in the outfield.
So why do you think that is?
I don't know. I can't. Sometimes you just have an idea of what a guy is, I guess. And that's what, you know, I always thought Eduardo Nunez could play the outfield. He couldn't play the infield, but I always thought one thing he could do when he was at shortstop, if there was a pop-up down the line and at our stadium, there's a lot of foul territory. Nunez could go and get it. This guy has a lot of range. You put him in center field and really teach him how to do it, I bet he'd be good. And they never tried it. And it's the same with Ref Snyder. I don't think he could play center field, but I certainly think he could play left and right. And if you add that to second, then you got a decent kind of utility guy, but they don't put him in the outfield. They don't try him out there. And I think part of the reason is they do – if you put him in right field, Aaron Judge can't play there. Or if you put him in left, then Ben Gamel and Slade Heathcott can't play there. But you've got to get more out of him than you're getting, because he could do more.
Yeah. He can. So he won the job from Stephen Drew in September last year. There's no question about it. And I am 100% confident in saying that if he got the same amount of at-bats Stephen Drew got last year, he would have been twice the offensive player that he was. It is a shame. I think that he's going to have to be traded because everything you just mentioned. But the problem now is he has no trade value. No team is going to give you anything for him. Whereas if they at least let him play at the major league level as a super utility guy, maybe he could show something and then they could get a little bit more bang for their buck.
If they at least played him at the AAA level as a utility guy, but they don't. I mean, they've thrown him at third. He's struggled. He's really struggled, and he looks more confident in second. And the thing with Ref Snyder that, you know, he's pretty good at not letting it bother him. You know, I there were some issues last year where, you know, they were questioning his attitude. I've never seen that. I think he's a guy who goes out there and really tries his best. But it's frustrating. It's got to be frustrating for him. They drafted him and asked him to change positions. He changed positions and then told him he wasn't good enough. Because last year, you could see it in Ref Snyder's face. Stephen Drew's hitting 180.
It was ridiculous.
You know, he's the one guy who's not getting called up, and they're wasting bullets here with him. And you know, he gets called up and he gets a home run in Boston, and they send him right back down. So I've seen the Yankees do the right thing 90% of the time, but with Ref Snyder, they're struggling with him. It amazes me that group of people can't figure out what to do with the guy. You know, to see him playing third base, to me, is a mystery. They've just signed a guy, a long-term deal with Chase Headley. Right or wrong, you've signed him. Ref Snyder's not going to start at third.
No, yeah, you're
using him in positions where he's not going to be helpful to you. Make him as versatile as you can, and put him in the outfield. Use him a little bit there, and maybe he can get at that last bench spot. Maybe he could be the next Ackley. He gives you something that Ackley doesn't give you. He can hit right-handed. But they don't put him in a position where he could help the big league team, and that's amazing to me because he is such a good hitter.
I agree, and just when you hear the organization talk about him, when you hear Girardi and Cashman talk about Ref Snyder, it's a different tone than when they talk about all of their other guys in the organization. They're always so positive, or at least Girardi's always so positive. Cashman, I give him credit; he can be honest, sometimes brutally honest, which I do enjoy. But they just have a little bit different tone about Ref Snyder when they talk about him. Clearly, they don't believe in him. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, I've come to that conclusion. You have to understand, he comes up in June of 14. That's the first time I saw him here, and I thought, once I saw him for 3 weeks, and I thought this guy's going to play here for 2 months and then get called up, and we'll never see him again. And now it's what, April 15th of 2016, he's still here. it's incredible, and it's not because he hasn't played well. He's played really well. There's that stigma, I guess, with him now that he doesn't play great defense. And I really think if the Yankees went out and praised his defense, you would look at his numbers and say, you know, he had a rough April last year, but after that he was really good. If the Yankees came out and really hyped it up, I think they can get a really good player for him. But if I'm a team looking for a second baseman, I'm not giving up anything. I'm going to try to steal him.
Yeah, No, and he'll perform wherever he goes, especially offensively. I feel confident in that.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this about him. There's a lot of scouts that I've met around, who've been around the last couple of years, who, you know, some guys have told me that they've offered the Yankees legitimate players. I mean, legitimate big league players.
Well, then what the hell are they waiting for?
Turn it down. Now they won't get those legitimate big league players.
That's amazing to me. You'd think Cashman's not afraid to make any trades. You'd think he would have pulled the trigger on that. Yeah, it baffles me. And I mean, Ref Snyder's not young anymore. He's 25 going on 26 years old. So it's got to happen soon for him.
Yeah, I would say this is a big year for him, but I don't know what he can prove. I mean, what does he have to hit to convince them that he's a, you know, that he's a big league option off the bench right now? I don't know if he can hit anything. I think he's got to show that he's a much better defender than they really think he is.
And then they'll say his base running isn't good. he can't be the utility guy because he can't pinch run for him or something.
Somebody's going to get this guy someday and be very pleased with how good an all-around player he is. He's never, you said it before, he's never going to win a Gold Glove. He's a 15 homer guy, maybe a 20 homer guy in the right park. But, you know, he's a solid, you know, good solid all-around player. But for him to be in AAA right now is kind of laughable, because I've seen a lot of guys come through the pike, and he's one of the better ones. He's one of the better players I've seen. And, you know, for him to be here and basically on the Austin Romine plan for three straight years is incredible.
Yeah, and Austin Romine, that leads in perfectly to the next guy I want to talk about, is Gary Sanchez, who had an outside shot at winning the job in spring training, but you just figured he's so young, and I think that they think he's legitimately going to be a starting catcher for them. So let him continue to develop in AAA. You think that's what their thought process was?
Yeah. He would have. I was shocked that they were even considering him. I know they have to say that he has a chance to win it, but there were a lot of people who considered him the favorite to win the backup spot. I just don't know what Gary Sanchez gives you as a backup catcher, because you're just not going to send him up to bat a whole lot. I mean, because you're always afraid of, you know, what happened the other night with Brian McCann. You know, if you're DH and your catcher, your backup catcher, you'll lose him. But I think Sanchez is another one of those guys. I mean, obviously, you hear about him offensively. He is a special offensive player. I mean, there's a natural ability there that's kind of just uncanny to watch. Last night he hits a home run, to win the game, a walk off in the 11th inning, and the ball, I mean, it just takes off like a golf ball off a driver.
Yeah, Cashman called him the Kraken because of the sound off of his bat.
Yeah, he's an unbelievable offensive player, and for our catcher to be that, you know, I was talking to Tyler Webb after the game yesterday about Sanchez, and he said for a catcher basically to be that good an offensive player, considering how much work they have to do when outside of hitting. You know, it shows you the raw ability the guy has. I mean, I keep saying our stadium is really, it's massive, it's expansive, it's one of the bigger stadiums in all of baseball. Sanchez hit a ball last year to left field over a tower of signs in left field to hit the ball over the fence. You get the ball over the fence and it's still, you know, 20 yards away from the from the tower of signs, and he hit the ball over the tower of signs, and the only player I've ever seen do that. So he's got incredible ability to hit. He's going to be a big league hitter someday, whether it's as a catcher or not. But I'll tell you this: he's a much better catcher than anyone ever gave him credit for. He calls a great game. He's got his throwing arm. I mean, he's gotten a lot of accolades for the arm. But I saw him the other night throw a runner out from a good base runner, throw him out from his knees. He's got a great throwing arm. He's quick behind the plate. He puts in a lot more effort into the catching side of it than I was told he did. So I think he's got a real future. And he's one of those guys, like, after seeing Montero for a couple of years, I thought if he's what Montero is as a defender, it's just not going to work. And as hard as Jesus tried to work behind the plate, it didn't happen for him. Sanchez is a much better athlete than Montero was. Yeah. He can make it work. He's become a good pitch caller. He gets down and blocks the ball in the dirt now, where he wasn't a couple of years ago. And now he's not so much relying on his throwing arm to control the running game as he is, you know, kind of working with the pitchers and going with them pregame and with their strategies and stuff like that. And he's putting a lot more time into that. I ranked him as my number two prospect in the organization coming into the season behind Caprillion. And I think that Sanchez is a very, very good, starting big league catcher moving forward, maybe an all-star caliber player. He's so much better than anyone told me he was.
The Yankees for the last few years have had great catcher depth in the organization. I mean, Cervelli, Romine, John Ryan Murphy. But Sanchez was always the guy that was the cut above them. So it's great to hear. He's been in the organization for a long time. Didn't they get him when he was 16 years old? Didn't they sign him?
Yeah, he's been one of those guys that's been around forever. I think he was 17 or 16 or whatever, but they've been talking about him for a long time, and I've paid a lot of attention to him in spring trainings. And he wasn't a good defender. He was a guy that I thought, oh, they're gonna have to move him to first because he just can't. It's nice to have the idea to stick him at catcher and see if it sticks, but it's not gonna work. And I'm as shocked as anybody to see how good he's been over since last July or whenever he got here at calling the game, number one, number two, working with the pitching staff, making in game adjustments. He's really good at it. And to see him control the running game the way he does, and in this league where you have a lot of National League based teams where they run a lot, to see him work on that part of his game here has really been fun.
Well, that's great to hear, and that's another thing that I was saying. I didn't know that really about him. I thought he was average at best defensively, but what you want on your backup catcher on the major league roster is not average defense and average game calling. You want somebody who can go in there and work with the pitchers. I mean, Romine can do that fine. He's a zero bat. I mean, he's kind of an automatic out. I know he hit in spring training, but I just don't see anything from him at the major league level offensively that ever tells me he's going to hit.
If Romine played every day, he hit you 250. I think that's but what Romine is he's a guy who's going to poke the ball to right. He's going to try to hit behind runners. He got robbed of a hit the other day, and he really should have had a two hit game the other night. But he's not near the offensive catcher that Montero or Gary Sanchez was. But in his defense, he was never billed that way.
Right.
And really, I mean, if you want the conversation really here was, with John Ryan Murphy, when he came up through here, I thought, well, this guy's a much better version of Romine offensively. I mean, he's got some work to do to be what Romine is defensively, but Murphy could really hit. And now when you see Sanchez, I mean, he blows Murphy out of the water. So as an offensive player. So Sanchez is one of the two or three best offensive catchers I've seen in the International League in the last 10, 15 years. He could really drive the ball. Not only might he be a big league starting catcher and like as an all-star caliber player, he might be a cleanup hitter.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's not easy to be as a catcher.
No, I mean, Posada was never the cleanup hitter, but I mean, what he gave the Yankees offensively was top of the league. So to hear that is great. And it's going to work out. I think the timing works out well with McCann, which is why I was in support of that signing when they gave him the 5-year contract. Is because they had these young catchers who would be ready when McCann was transitioning away from being a catcher, maybe playing a little bit more first base. So, I mean, I don't know. You tell me, could Sanchez be on the major league team catching either in a starting role next year or a semi-starting role, kind of splitting duty with McCann?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question. I don't know how you split time with McCann. I mean, you almost have to keep three catchers. That could happen if you're gonna play him against lefties and just use Romine off the bench, but I don't know how he splits time with McCann, because it's not like McCann's offense is poor either, and McCann gives you great defense, so he's a team leader. So I mean, yeah, I could see Sanchez. The thing with McCann, he's got two more years. I think they might have gone one too many years with McCann, but that said, that's what it took to
you're
get
not,
that.
Yeah, you're like, not going to get him if you don't do that.
Yeah, you needed him. So I think it'll be interesting to see how they kind of work Sanchez in. There just might be some times over the next couple of years where they just have to lose their DH if the catcher has to come out. But McCann has proven pretty durable. I think they can get away with that. And I think that the plan next year for the Yankees is very obviously that they're going to have to use Sanchez as the backup.
Yeah, you can't keep sticking him in the minors if he's hitting like you're saying, and he mean he's got a major league talent, so that's good. All right, so before we wrap this up, I do want to ask. So the Scranton shuttle, you know, who are some of the arms that we could see riding the Scranton shuttle this year back and forth to the Bronx?
Pazos has to be.
He pitched pretty good for them in September last year.
This guy he's going to be in the big leagues for 15 years. I'm telling you, this guy's one of my favorite players that I've seen. I mean, I really like the way he attacks hitters. He's just a good solid lefty. All the talk last year was about Lindgren, and rightfully so. He was the top draft pick, but I think Pazos is better than Lindgren. I mean, he really has that great slider, but he throws that. He comes hard at you with that fastball. It's tough to see. It really sneaks up on a lot of guys. So I think he's going to be a guy who's up or down two or three times.
Well, so they just sent down Sessa and called up Tyler Olson today. We're recording this on Friday. Why would they call up Olson instead of Pazos?
Probably that's a good question. But Olson can give you a little bit of length too. I mean, Pazos can't do that right now. Olson started the other day when I believe he went four innings. So he kind of is that second long man he can give you what Sessa gave you, but he could also give you the lefty on lefty thing, which you're going to need against the Mariners because they do bring some lefties. If you need to get Robbie Cano out in the sixth inning, you might want to go with Olson in that spot. And he does give you another lefty. So Pazos would have too, but you know, let's say that CC gets knocked out in the second inning. You've used Nova the other night, and he wasn't great. God. So it at least gives you Olson, and that's the reason I could think of. But I love Pazos. I think he's a good situational lefty. He could develop into a Mike Stanton type of guy.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, interesting comparison. The bullpen. I'm interested to see how the bullpen Scranton shuttle works out once they get Chapman back, because it's really only one spot. Last year they had two spots for that. But other than the big three plus Barbato's been fantastic so far. And Shreve, I know they really like him. So it's really one spot in the bullpen that's going to be rotated in and out.
Yeah, that is going to be interesting. I assumed Brandon Pinder would start. I don't think he's better than Johnny Barbato by any stretch. But I just assumed, because the Yankees do really like Pinder, that he'd be a guy that would start the season up there. But Barbato won that job. And now that he's here, I don't know if there's a clear avenue for a guy like Pinder to get up. I mean, it's got to be that one spot that we saw today, the Sessa spot. You know, and I guess once Nova or settles in, or the starting rotation works its way out, or maybe they have to put Nova in it or whatever. But once it starts to work itself out, you think you could probably have that second, that second opening there. But I don't know. As it stands right now, it's the Tyler Olson spot, and if they're looking for some length out of that spot, and I like what they're doing, I think that's the right move, to go with somebody who can give you two or three innings or maybe four innings at a time, especially as Nova kind of settles into his role. The guys like Pazos and Brandon Pinder and Tyler Webb, I guess, to a certain extent, even though Webb could give you some distance, but those guys, it's going to be tough for them to kind of crack the rotation and the bullpen.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. So I was waiting until the end of the episode to ask you, because I know you grew up in Scranton, and it used to be the Phillies minor league affiliate. So are you a Phillies or a Yankees fan?
I grew up a Yankees fan.
I was going to say, it sounds like you're a Yankees fan, so that's good. It would be kind of kind of tough if you had to watch all these guys play and you weren't even rooting for them. So that's definitely good. So
yeah, I will say this though, covering the Phillies teams, it was a great thrill for me, because number one, they were the only guys in town, but they had, some guys who went on to great careers, who just great character guys. I've always liked Utley's one of my favorites. Nick Punto was a really great player here. Spent a lot of years in the big leagues, but there's been just so many guys who I've met here who've gone on to have great big league careers, and started out in the Phillies organization that have gone on to be just great players. And I was really happy to have had the chance to cover the Phillies teams. I grew up a Yankees fan. They were the team I watched all the time. But a lot of people ask me that and just assume that I had a rough time watching the Phillies all these years. But really, I didn't. I mean, it was the time of my life.
Yeah, at least it's not like the Red Sox or the Mets or something where you really have to hate the team.
That wasn't the Mets.
Yeah. All right, well, Donnie, thanks again for joining. I think it was a lot of good stuff. Always great to hear about these minor league guys, and it sounds like there's a lot to look forward to. So, again, find Donnie on Twitter at DonnieCollinsTT. And, again, thank you, and hopefully we can get you on again in the future.
All right, sounds good.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.